Our meeting tonight is a little bit different from a traditional near-death experience, but I am really excited about this meeting. In the late 80s or early 90s, when I was first at KSL Radio, I ran into some people who were involved in this incident in 1986 that happened in Cokeville. I've been enamored with trying to find out about miracles, genuine miracles, the appearance of angels, miraculous events, near-death experiences, which is what typically happens in this meeting. And you always have to be careful when you check into them, because some are not real. Some people make things up and so forth. This particular event had a whole bunch of kids involved, and I'll let our guests talk about that. And I was quickly able to verify by interviewing a number of the kids who had been involved in this incident and their parents, and I just knew that this was a real event. I've been fascinated by it ever since, and I am thrilled with the idea that it has now been made into a fabulous film. We have two speakers here tonight. One of them, Lori Conger, was a child in the grade school, in the classroom where the event actually happened. She experienced the event in Cokeville, Wyoming in 1986. She will describe what happened first person as she lived it. The other speaker is the filmmaker, T.C. Christensen. You may be familiar with some of his work. He is responsible for the fabulous film 17 Miracles and did the filmography on the first Work in the Glory movie and a whole bunch of others. He just does a tremendous job. For anyone who has not seen the movie, The Cokeville Miracle, I would highly recommend it. It is just fabulous and first rate. Without any further introduction, I'll turn the time over to T.C. Christensen.
Thank you, Martin. It is wonderful to be here tonight. Thank you for that lovely introduction. One thing, though, I have to bring you up to speed on is that my wife very often says, why don't you get them to say something more about you and about us? I mean, you didn't learn anything about our family or anything like that. So she's not here tonight. So I'm going to tell you something that maybe will appease her. As we walked in, I walked in with and met some new friends from Layton. Where's my new friends from Layton? Oh, good, right here. That's where I was raised, in Layton. I was raised in what was really a pretty small house, and my folks had a lot of kids. When nighttime came, they didn't really tend to assign bedrooms. They'd just start grabbing kids and shoving, you go in that room, you go in that room, kids on the couch, laying on the floor. There were a lot of us everywhere you went. Mass of humanity. I never knew what it was like to sleep alone till I got married. It was way later. Now, you laugh, I think it's sad. But tonight I can go home and tell my wife, I told them all about you, honey. They know more about you than you probably want them to know. In telling our story of the Cokeville Miracle, one thing that was very different for me from my recent films is this film has a very bad guy. I have made several films where we really did not have an antagonist. Maybe it was the weather or something like that, but there wasn't a bad person. This film had a bad guy, and I really enjoyed trying to bring that person to life and making him be as bad as possible and as bad as he really was. For those of you who have not seen the film or maybe don't even hardly recall the incident, let me give you this little bit of a capsulized moment. In 1986, David Young and his wife Doris took over the Cokeville Elementary, a town of 525 people. They got the entire student body into one classroom, 154 people. They held them for 2.5 hours with guns and a bomb, threatening different things. He was crazy. People ask me what his motivations were, and because they're not clear. He was crazy. You don't know what his motivations were. The investigating sheriff said that if you understand David Young, you're crazy yourself. It's that kind of a person. He took over that school after that long, the bomb went off. As a result of this experience and the bomb going off, only two people died. It was the two perpetrators, David and his wife, Doris. But what I was mostly interested in telling this story happened in the days and the weeks afterwards. Because what then happened is several children began to talk, and they would say to their parents something like this: "Mom, you know why I got out of that room? Because there was a lady in white, and she stood by me, and she told me what I needed to do to be safe, and when the bomb went off, she helped me." That is really the thrust of our film, and what we spend an entire third act telling. I want to show you tonight some clips of the film so I can talk to you a little more freely about some of the things that I learned in doing the Cokeville Miracle. First, I want you to meet the bad guy, David Young.
Miss Cook, we're holding the school hostage. Don't push any alarms, don't call for help. We have guns, and this is a bomb. I need just pull this trigger, and this building, with everybody inside of it, will be blown sky high. Try and hit me over the head or anything like that, and I will pull this trigger when I go down.
I make myself clear, Miss Cook! Stop!
Get over here.
Get over here!
Are you crazy? Kids! I am not going to do this.
Keys.
Get out of here! You're no daughter of mine! No daughter of mine!
It was so tempting that Goldilocks set about helping herself. First she tried a spoonful from Papa Bear's great big bowl. "Ow," she yelled, "too hot." Next she tried a spoonful from Mama Bear's medium-sized bowl. "Brr, too cold." Finally, Goldilocks tried a spoonful from Baby Bear's tiny little. "What exactly are you doing here?"
"Quiet, lady."
"You've got to be joking. This is my room."
"No, this is my room. Now sit down and shut up."
I think there are many similarities between Brian David Mitchell and Wanda Barzee, the kidnappers of Elizabeth Smart, and Doris and David Young. David Young was the town marshal in Cokeville in the 70s for a six-month period. He was not renewed in his contract. The mayor at the time said he just thought he could get away with anything, and too often he did. He was very brilliant in some ways and able to convince some people to follow him. He mathematically showed, by coming up with this formula and a calculator, he learned two things. One, he showed he could die and bring himself to life again. He figured out how to do that. And he also proved mathematically that God equals zero. His diaries revealed, and he kept many of them that they found after this event, his diaries revealed that He started searching for life's answers as a young man, and to this point in his life, he was still as empty as when he began. Next clip. I want to show you an incident that happened once we move into the room.
Teacher, are we gonna die?
We can't die. We're just little kids.
I'll be right back, Les. Mr. Young? Mr. Young, I have a proposition for you. You can keep me. You can shoot me to make your point. I'm fine with that. But would you please let the children go? I'll do whatever it takes to keep them safe, Mr. Young. Mr. Young?
The best thing you could do for these kids, lady, is sit down and shut up.
How can a genius think around here?
What do you want?
Back off, little man!
Come on, Jesus.
It is documented that three different adults during this hostage situation stepped forward and offered to give their life if he would let the children go. This was one of the heroes you just saw, Verlene Binion. Anybody in here teach school? You taught Sunday school, primary, I don't know, anything with little kids? You know what it is like to have custody of small, innocent children. Those teachers up there in that little town, this was beyond anything they could ever imagine. For me, it is one of the most heart-rending parts of this story, those people trying to prevent and stay in front of those kids when you have a crazy bomber there. They couldn't do many of the things that we see with cops and robbers movies because he had rigged this bomb with a dead man switch, meaning he was tied to it. If he was shot, if he was tried to be apprehended, all he had to do was go like that, just that far of a move, and the bomb would go off. Eventually, the bomb did go off, but none of those innocents were injured. And I want to show you some things that happened in the days afterward.
Chase, the doctor said that we should talk. Do you know why he said that? Don't you want to talk to us?
It's just, I'm scared.
Don't be scared, honey. You can tell us anything.
It's about that day with the mean guy.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, what I didn't tell you is that there were other people in the room with us.
You mean the teachers? What other people?
The ones all in white. One was a lady. She stood by me. She said that what those people were doing was very bad and that the bomb was going to go off. She said if I stood by the window, everything would be okay.
So she helped you.
Did she tell you her name?
But I think it was Grandma Meister.
Jace, Grandma Meister lives in Pinedale. She wasn't at your school that day.
Okay.
That's Grandma Meister.
That's her.
That's the lady you saw?
That's my angel.
think that's just too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence.
Chase, why didn't you tell us about this before?
I knew you wouldn't believe me.
Katie, can you tell Mr. Hartley what you told me? Katie, he wants to hear from you.
Well, I was coloring, and then when I looked up, there was this lady standing there. She was all in white. She told me that she loved me, and that my brother would come and get me, and everything would be okay. And then I looked down for a second. And when I looked back up, she was gone. Then my brother came and took me over by the window.
When the bomb went off, she was right there to get out.
And her sister claims that she saw something too.
I was coloring. And when I looked up, I saw angels all around where the tape on the floor was. The angel people, they stayed between us and the bad guy. One was a lady, and she stood by me.
Rachel, what did the lady look like?
It was like a white dress.
What kind of hair?
Like yours, but more curly.
But my same color. Excuse me a minute. Look at this.
That's her. That's my angel, except without the glasses.
That's my mother, Mr. Hartley. She died when I was 15. Oh, she must have come back to watch over them.
And there were others. The Swanson girl said a woman helped her out of the room.
Then when I got out the door, the lady was gone.
Jenny later identified the woman as her aunt who died 10 years ago.
So again, it was an ancestor?
Yeah. What's that about?
Who else? Who else would care more about us than our own family? Can't you see? You can't see what's going on here.
I don't know what I see.
You are such a cop. Every adult and every child made it out of that explosion alive. And you haven't the humility to thank God for blessing us.
Chase, is there anything else that maybe you didn't tell us? Anything at all? It would really help your dad if you could think of something.
Yeah, I know something else. Light bulbs. Right before the bomb went off, lots of angels came down through the ceiling. They looked like light bulbs.
Light bulbs. You mean like this?
Like that. There was an angel for everybody. They were holding
holding hands in a circle around the bomb. Then when the bomb happened, they went fast up into the ceiling.
This guy had police training. He knew what he was doing with that bomb. But it didn't work like it was designed. It should have gone off, but instead it went straight up through the ceiling.
Several, so many of the children that had these experiences said they would identify the person who helped them as being an ancestor. One of them, a young girl who was in the room, was named Rachel Walker. She said that she not only saw angels in that room, she saw angel children. She said it bothered her. She didn't understand it for a while until it came to her, was given to her, whatever. And she realized that they were her unborn children. She said she realized that they were there to support and sustain her, to let her know that she needed to keep trying and to go on. So, the Cokeville Miracle paints this picture, ancestors helping. Yet to be born children there supporting family, all in one line, all there supporting and trying to help in a time of need. Now, one thing I was told as I was finishing the film, I would show it in a rough cut form to audiences and try to determine what's not working, what is working. One thing I was told a few times is, you're not being consistent. They said, I'm not being consistent. What do you mean I'm being consistent? They said, some of the kids said they saw young people, that the angels were young. Others said they saw them old. Some said they were dressed in white or looked like a light bulb. Others said that they just had on regular street clothes. You're going to confuse people. You have to make that consistent. That took me about a half a second to think that through and let those people know. That's what those kids said, and I'm not going to change what they said. That's what they said, that's the way I'm going to show it in the film. My own belief is, the reason for that inconsistency is, that those kids were each given what they needed for it to work for them. For instance, this boy saw this old grandmother or great-grandmother that helped him. I talked to the family about that woman and about that picture later. They told me they don't have a picture of that lady young. If he would have seen her as a 25-year-old, he never would have been able to make that connection, that that was his ancestor. I think that's how it works. One more clip.
Was saved at the end was our Cindy.
Spirit about town. We loved each other. each other. It was a gift, and we knew it.
We know that there are people on the other side who care. We know we're not alone. We know.
I know I'm here for a reason, and it's my children, my husband. And I was saved that day to be a mother to them and to teach them that not everyone in this world is good, but that we can forgive and that we can move on.
Doris Santa told us that,
kids, this is an experience you'll all tell your children and your grandchildren all about.
But she was right. I will tell my children and my grandchildren over and over of the miracles of that day and that prayers are answered.
I know that He protected us that day. He sent His angels to protect us. And I'm not ashamed to be a voice of that. Before I go to bed at night, I check on my four children. They are miracles to me. They wouldn't be here if I wasn't here.
One of my favorite parts of researching and dealing with and making this film has been meeting the great people of Colkeville, Wyoming. It's a great town and great people. I dragged with me tonight one of those great people. Didn't want you to have to sit there and look at my bald head this whole time. I brought one of my people who has become my friends through this, so you can hear her side of the story.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. It's truly a privilege to be here and share some thoughts and experiences and feelings with you tonight. As was mentioned, my name is Lori Conger, and I was about 12 feet away from the bomb when it exploded. I don't know if any of you have ever been in a life-threatening situation. Possibly you have. Or if you've had a good 2.5 hours to seriously consider that this might be your very last day on Earth. I was just 11 years old when I faced that scenario. I was just finishing the 5th grade, May 16th, 1986, when David and Doris Young marched into our school with a lot of guns and a homemade bomb that had a string attached to his wrist and a determination to blow up everybody in that 30 by 32 foot room. So what do you do in such a moment? Well, I'll tell you what we did. We prayed. We could never have fully understood as children just how great our danger was or the full capacity of the situation, but we knew that we were in trouble. And when you're in trouble, you pray. And so we did. We prayed as classes. We prayed as siblings. We prayed in our hearts. We held hands and we prayed. And I remember thinking, as I looked at David Young, I remember thinking, you know, there's a lot that he can do. He can control a lot about our situation today. He can hold us here. But he cannot keep us from praying and turning to God for help. We all were in the same situation. Every one of us has a little bit of a different story to tell. So I'm going to briefly share mine. My two brothers and I left our house that day for school, never imagining in our wildest dreams that by afternoon we would be hostages. There were 136 children in the room that day and 18 adults, including a UPS driver, a mother who had come late to drop her kindergartner off, and a woman who was interviewing for a kindergarten job the following year. She got the job. I knew something was wrong as soon as I stepped foot in that room. There was a feeling there that is not even explainable, but it was a terrible, evil feeling that you just want to run from. as I mentioned, my two brothers were there with me. My older brother was in sixth grade, and in his effort to comfort me, he told me everything was going to be okay because there was no way that these people wanted to die. There was no way they were going to make that bomb go off. Although he was very wrong, I believed him. He always seemed to know everything to me, so I figured he knew this too. But my younger brother was in first grade, and I felt the need to watch over him and protect him. And so I went over to him at one point to offer him some comfort, and I said, "Kevin, we're hostages right now. Do you know what that means?" And he said that he didn't, and I explained that we were in this room and we couldn't leave and we had to do everything that these people said. And then I looked at him and I said, "Kevin, we might die today." Great comfort, right? From an older sister. He's told me, "If he needs help again, please don't be the one to come to his rescue." I remember yearning for my mother. I wanted my mother so bad. And then immediately I felt guilty for that because, of course, I didn't want her to be in the same situation with us. I didn't want her to possibly lose her life that day either. Seriously wondered if I'd ever see her or the rest of my family again. And it was while I was thinking about these things, deep in thought about these things, that all of a sudden I was thrown back against the wall and this deafening roar filled my ears. And interestingly enough, there was this one instant of just complete silence, and I saw this bright light and I wondered if I was dead or alive. And then I heard a voice say, "The bomb went off," and there was just complete chaos and the room was black and filled with smoke. And so I just got on my hands and knees and I started crawling toward the door, and I got up to run and I could hear bullets being fired, and I fully expected that I was going to get shot in the back as I ran from that school. And as I was running out, all of a sudden I remembered that I didn't know where my little brother was. So I turned around to run back into the school. Interestingly enough, I was not worried about my older brother. I had complete faith that he could take care of himself and get out, and he did. If I would have known that my little brother had help from angels, I wouldn't have worried about him either. The firemen grabbed me. They wouldn't let me go back in the school, and they forced me to run toward the street. And I remember as I ran, I saw bodies everywhere on the grass, and I did not know if they were dead or alive. I did not know if one of them was my little brother or my classmates. All of the kids, we were just so black from the smoke. You couldn't even recognize anybody, and there were kids with just skin hanging off their arms and their necks from burns. And so we kind of started walking toward home. We were okay, and we didn't know what else to do, and we started walking toward home. And it was then that we saw someone coming toward us, and we realized it was our mother. And it took her longer to recognize us than it took us to recognize her, but we started running toward each other. And I will never, as long as I live, forget what it felt like when my mother reached us and she wrapped her arms around us and just engulfed us. I felt safe for the first time in a really long time. And you know, I learned from that experience how powerful a mother's embrace is. You know, no matter what our children have faced, no matter what mistakes they've made or what kind of day they've had, they can always find comfort in an unconditional love and safety in the arms of their mother. And I'm so grateful for that. It was interesting when I found my older brother. He was cussing, actually. He wasn't used to being wrong. And I think he was as surprised as I was that he'd actually been wrong about that bomb. So psychologists actually told our parents, the families, that we needed to return to that school as quickly as we possibly could. And so just 2 days later, after church, my parents, they dragged us there to that school. We didn't want to go. I remember walking in there and seeing the room again, and it's real hard to explain what that was like, but there was still just black. You could see bullet holes in the wall, and I remember just was thinking about where I was and where the bomb was, and just, you could smell the smoke still. It was difficult to return there, and I just remember thinking, I cannot believe that we survived this. And then I remembered how just 2 days earlier in that room, there had been the most terrible feeling ever, just this evil, horrible, horrible feeling, and I recognized that it was gone, and in its place, there was this peaceful, amazing feeling in that room. And I realized that what had once become a room full of terror and evil had now become a room that was sacred, and that we were literally standing on hallowed ground. Interestingly enough, too, the school district insisted that we finish the last 2 weeks of school. There's absolutely no getting out of school. Nothing works. So we had to go finish, and I think that was a blessing, so we wouldn't be so scared to go back the next fall. although it might seem crazy to some people, I am so grateful to remember so many things about that day. Although parts are painful and they're not easy to relive, I only need to think about all of the miracles that happened that day to be full of just complete humility and gratitude and realize how blessed my life has been. It reminds me constantly of what really matters in my life. Some people want to forget because it hurts too much to remember such a terrifying day. But the problem with forgetting the experience altogether is that we also forget all that God did for us that day. Sometimes we have to remember some of the pain to remember the miracles. And then when we remember the miracles, somehow the pain begins to subside, and all that we are left with is gratitude. The thing is, as excruciating as some of our trials are in life, some of the things that we go through, if we look closer, we realize they're actually the source of some of our greatest blessings. That day in May 1986, it was the most terrifying day of my life. I felt so helpless and so scared, but it's also shaped my life and my testimony and my faith, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. I never want to forget what God did for us that day. I never want to forget the peace that I felt when I prayed, or the relief I felt when I found out that we had all survived. I never want to forget that even though we may not always see them or hear them, that we do have angels that are there to help us through our darkest, most difficult moments, even if that means taking the brunt of a blast from a bomb that was meant to kill everybody near it. I've often been asked, did you see angels that day? And the short answer is no, I don't remember seeing angels that day, but I know they were there. I know that I was not alone. I truly believe that someday I will know who was with me. I just want to leave you with my witness that God is real, that He does hear us when we pray, that He is there for us, especially in our most deepest moments when we need help, and that He can comfort us and He can heal us from whatever it is that we have gone through, because He is real and His power is real. He's a God of miracles. I don't think we have to look very far to see miracles in our lives and know that He loves us. And I'll tell you, if He cares enough about a room full of little Wyoming brats to send angels to save us, I promise you He cares about you, and He will be there for you when you need Him to. I just share that with you, and thank you for this opportunity.
Let's see if any of these nice people have something they want to know of either one of us.
TC, maybe you could tell the audience about the bomb. This wasn't just some little bogus toy on a cart. How he prepared the bomb, which is a fascinating story, and how it was supposed to go off and how the angels diverted it.
This man had police training. This wasn't just somebody trying to think of how to make a bomb work. He took a mini shopping cart. It's not one of the big four-wheel ones like we always see now. If you remember, they used a lot of small stores had these little two-wheel smaller ones that you pull behind you. He took that and he put in it about every wicked thing he could think of to cause harm and destruction. He had five blasting caps and a gallon of gasoline and all of this other material that was designed to shoot in the air and then catch on fire so that there'd be no breathing. It would be like the entire room was on fire. And he had chains and ammunition in there too, so that as this all started to explode, it would all go out like shrapnel. Well, as you saw in that clip, it did not work the way that it was meant to, for several reasons. And it's one of the things we go through and dissect with the film, is how many different ways that those children were blessed that that did not go off. David Young, at the time, was living in Tucson, Arizona, and had been practicing the bomb. And he said in his diary, every time he'd do his tests, went off perfectly, love it, perfect, perfect. This was the only time he had problems.
Thank you. In the first two scenes in the movie, you set up so beautifully how Doris was brainwashed and bullied into going along with this. that scene where he pours the milk out and screams. It's perfect. It does that so well. But what about Penny? What's happened to Penny? Do you know?
That's a good question. I don't know where she is. That's actually not even her real name, because she wanted to go on and live her life without being connected to this, I think. But I do know that she is alive and she has a family. And I have to say how grateful I am to her. I admire her for standing up to him and saying, I will not do this, because in his frame of mind that day, she risked her life to say that. I don't know if I would have had that courage. So truly, I hope someday I can tell her that I admire her.
I know they've talked about having children around as angels and guarding them. Was there any experience in your research, like on the handcart company or anything, that there were angels with the handcart company? Or?
Yes, I did do a couple of handcart films, and yes, there was several. Not in terms of children. I don't ever remember reading anything about that, but yes, there were several experiences where people mentioned someone being there to help them. And most of the time in that case, they were not light bulbs, or they were not this white idea either. They were just people that were in a place that really nobody should have been.
First off, did any of the children or adults involved, did they pass to the other side briefly? And second of all, have any of them that you know of had subsequent visions or saw angels subsequently in their life where the veil is thinner now?
No. That's the short answer, I guess. I don't think anybody died and came back. I think everybody made it out and had the help that they needed to get out, although some were seriously injured. And I have not heard of anybody saying that they had revisits from that same person, but they sure have never in any way denied what they saw that day or anything like that.
Let me just comment also about that comment, that there have been other incidents. This is one reason I was very attracted to this story. There have been other spiritual experiences where a child might come forth and say he saw something or whatever, and later you find out it's a hoax. He kind of made it up and embellished and so forth. One of the things I loved of this story is that it's several children, and even though it was 29 years ago, they told their parents what happened right then, and the parents still stand up and verify that's what they told me. And many times they were told something those kids could not have known that. So it was really, boy, a lot of witnesses to this.
That you provided several places of comic relief in the movie, was that a true and accurate situation that happened? And then also, the music that you always use is always so touching. And how did you choose that? Is it Shogun? Okay. That how you chose that?
Suogon. In regards to humor, I just know how uncomfortable it is for an audience to sit there for so long, and tension. And so we did place some humor in there. Some of those were jokes that I wrote, which are the best jokes, I think. But some of them were actual. For instance, the little boy that says AK-47, and I'm not going to tell you the joke, but the one about the AK-47, that happened. That was in some of the writings. I do my music a little different than most filmmakers, and that is that most of the music that we use has been written not for the purpose of our movie. It's for other reasons. When I'm driving around in my car, like today, and this kind of part of my life, I listen to all these pieces of music, and I select them. And then my son, who's the editor, we get together and say, hey, that might be good for this, and that might be good for that. So instead of the normal way in making a movie, which is you finish the movie, and then a composer scores it, we already have the music, and we edit the picture to the music. And I think that allows us to, a lot of times, add emotion that may not have been there.
Yes, I'm curious about the sequence of events. Of course, in the clip, it was short. It showed the bomb going off, some of the children and the angels. But you had mentioned in your story about it, gunshots. When did they take place? Were there bullet holes around the room?
Well, first of all, the bomb was rigged with a lot of shrapnel. So, and it was kind of, I hate fireworks. I'm sorry, I'm not a 4th of July fan, and this is why. Because it just sounded like pop, 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 boom. David Young, he was in the bathroom at the time that the bomb exploded. that was connected to the room, and he came out and he did start shooting. The music teacher actually was shot in the back, but he survived. So there was just a lot of explosions and popping, and it just sounded like a whole bunch of people were there firing at us, even though that isn't really what was going on.
He was in the bathroom when the bomb went off.
We can't tell you everything. You gotta see this movie.
By the way, the three of us are going right after.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your vulnerability. That's hard to do. And so I was just wondering if you would mind sharing a little bit more about, you said your brother was helped by an angel. I don't know if you mind sharing his experience.
I wouldn't mind, except that I don't have permission to do so. It was just a sacred thing for him, and he just has not even told all of our family. So I hope one day that he will, but thank you for asking. But if I could, I would share it with you.
Two things. First of all, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, that's Whitesides Elementary School. My kids went to Whitesides, so I recognize that. So thank you for Whitesides Elementary. The other thing is I really appreciated in this movie how you didn't make it a specific denomination. Although I was clear what was going on there, it wasn't until the very last little minute where you get real clear what with the song that they sing. You, if you've ever been in primary, you know what that song is. I really, really appreciated that. That was very tasteful, and to me, it would widen the appeal of the Christian to all of the parents who have taught their children how to pray. So thank you for...
Thanks for that comment. That. You need to know that that town has many religions in it, and it would not have been fair to have confined it to anyone, because they were all blessed, and they all deserved it. They were great people.
Mine kind of goes along with that. I understand that you definitely wanted to include all different groups, which I think was very smart. I'm curious to know, how is it being accepted in other parts of the country, and how far can it go? I talked to my friend today who lives in Portland, Oregon, and she's desperate to see it, but it's not up there yet.
Well, you know, it's one of the tough things of making independent film. When you go see a big Hollywood film, one of these films like Inside Out that's out this week in Jurassic World, they are spending $50 or $70 million, not making the film, just getting it in front of you. We are not able to do that. We have had the film in several other cities, some southern cities, and we do great with the people that come and see it, but we're having a hard time making them aware that it's there and getting them to come out. We had a couple of free screenings in Dallas before we started, hooked up with a Baptist church and had several hundred people come. And they were very receptive. They loved the message and so forth. But when we opened in Dallas, it just did not do very well. We had cards out, and we'd ask, was there anything in here that seemed denominational or something? And it went right over their heads, any of it. They were all fine with it.
Lori, I was interested in the atmosphere in the room for those 2.5 hours. In the movie, it's depicted as fairly calm and kind of quiet, not hysterical children or anything. Was that pretty much how it was in your memory?
You know, it really was, and I get asked that a lot because it seems a little bit unbelievable, doesn't it? I remember when I first went in there, and I think the principal said he has a bomb, and he's holding a sausage. There was this moment where kids are crying. We were all just crying, and it's hard to believe. But then there was peace. There was just overwhelming peace for all of us and throughout the ordeal. And some children, they don't even remember hardly feeling fear, in a sense, because they just felt so much peace that somehow things were going to be okay. And so we did just kind of talk quietly, and some kids, the younger kids, kind of colored or played quietly. And it wasn't outward sobbing or hysterics or anything, which I think is quite remarkable.
I think that is basically one of the miracles. Not everybody had to see someone or hear a voice or whatever, but just to be in a room like that and have calm children and people that felt like, you know what, things are going to be okay, that's part of the miracle.
First of all, I'd like to say that the movie coming out right now in 2015, that is a miracle, and I thank you for that. And the other thing I would like to ask is, can you share with us how God moved you to make this movie?
Well, thank you. That's a nice question to ask, how God moved me to make this film. Here's the reality of it is that I had a premiere 7 years ago, and after the premiere, my cousin came up to me and said, boy, have I got a movie for you. And I thought, cousins don't know what a good movie is. Cousins come over and break your toys at Christmas. That's all I know about my cousins. But he told me this little paragraph of it, and I thought, that's good. And then I took a meeting with a person who knew a lot about it, and I thought, that's better. But I had other projects, and it's taken 7 years from then till now. And it's really mostly a matter of, I just love the story. I felt like this is something that people could benefit by, and I felt like I could get a handle on it and tell it in a good way.
One of the things that I enjoyed, messages I got personally out of the movie, had to do with the police officer and his struggle of living in a terrible world, in an ugly world, and even the last 2 weeks, all the news, it's sometimes overwhelming, all these things that are happening and this battle that he's fighting with that. And I enjoyed the message of the movie. I don't necessarily want to verbalize that, but wondered if you wouldn't mind verbalizing how you treated that.
Well, you should know that in making a film, it's very difficult to make a film about a disaster and get people interested in it unless you personalize it. That's why the movie Titanic deals with a family of just a few people. And I knew I had to do that too. I can't make a film about 154 people. So I had to find someone who struggled with it and changed. And that's a true story. That police officer actually went through all of those feelings. As I met him and discovered his story, I just felt like that's the guy.
I was just curious if, besides sharing their stories with you, did any of the children who had experience with the angels, do they share their stories or do they all keep them personal?
A few do share them, but I will tell you it's not easy for them to do, and it's kind of taken a while to get to that point, because when you have experiences like that that are sacred, you don't want to just share them with anybody at the grocery store who says, hey, I heard you were in a bombing. You want to tell me how that angel helped you out? It's not appropriate. In the appropriate time and way, they do share, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Can I add that way I respect those people so much, a reason I do is because, even though I'm telling you Cokeville is a great place, they're still little kids. And those kids got made fun of, and they got teased, and they carried an emotional scar. And several of them, when they told their parents what happened, their parents would begin to cry, and the child would think, I've done something wrong. This is bad. And then it would kind of sit. So anyway, there's a lot of other emotions involved with it, but some of them are so terrific that they would come forth and they let us get into their life and show this on a big screen, and I love them for it.
You seem like you don't have any kind of emotional trauma from that. So did the angels help you with that?
I've had a lot of emotional trauma, and it really took years to get to where I could sleep in my own bed and not be afraid of every white van or every man that looked like anything like David Young. I mean, it was very, very hard to get to that point, but I do believe that because of our faith and family, my parents chose to focus on just being so grateful and seeing the miracles and taking it a day at a time and relying on God to provide another miracle, which was to help us to heal, and I'm grateful that He has.
Have you been able to keep in touch with your fellow classmates over the years since then? Have they all been able to live happy, normal, successful rest of their childhood and adolescence and adult lives?
So not everybody has healed from the events of that day. Some people still carry a lot of emotional scars and are not able to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. They're certainly not going to see the movie that kind of takes them right back to that spot. So I think everybody has gotten married, and it's not like they went off the deep end at some point, but they are still carrying a lot of pain and have not really visited it enough, gotten through it well enough to be able to want to ever talk about it, or it does affect them to this day.
How did your actors that acted in the movie, how did they take this movie? How did they respond to it? You know, my hero in filmmaking is Frank Capra. Frank Capra is who made It's a Wonderful Life and some other great films of the 30s and 40s. Frank Capra said, 80% of directing is casting, and I take that to heart. We put in a lot of time finding the right actors. Sometimes not just that they're the best actor, but they're the type of person that I think can portray this emotion. Then one of the things that we do on the set, typically in an emotional film, you know this music that I pre-selected? We have that with us, and I'll play that as we're getting ready to play the scene. Or if it's a silent scene, we'll play it during the scene. That sets a mood. Those actors, they're able to read the entire script. They're able to see in their performance and what we're doing what the film is becoming. And so they all told me that they had a great time. Maybe they just want another job. I don't know, but that's what they told me.
Years ago, there was a book that was written about it. Is that still available, or is that out of print?
There are a couple of books, and one of them was written by a father of one of the children there, and it's changed names a few times, and I think it just changed again because of the film. They've changed it to The Cult Film Miracle, and that's more of a... it kind of tells the whole storyline. It's kind of a book. And then 9 years ago, there's an organization in Cokeville called the Cokeville Miracle Foundation, and they compiled what anybody that was involved with that day at all, from policemen to the bomb expert, to children, to parents, to teachers, could write in and write anything they wanted, and they compiled a book, and it's called Witness to Miracles. You could just go through, and there's all these accounts of whatever anybody wanted to share about that day. It's pretty remarkable. It went out of print for a while, but it is now available on Amazon, I believe, that you can get it as an e-book. Witness to Miracles.
Folks, thank you very much for having us. You're lovely people to get to talk to. Thank you very much.